Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Vibing with Sleazy, the podcast. This is season 5, episode 13. And I want to thank everybody for listening, tuning in, and downloading. It's been a lot of fun so far. Season 5 has been going great. I've been pumping out some solo episodes and pumping out some episodes with guests. And I'm very happy to have a guest tonight. I want to thank everybody that's been listening to these sports episodes lately. I'm hoping to get a NBA one and a Derby one coming up here as I wrap up this season 5. So stay tuned for that. I do have a cool guest coming up in the future is Nick Byrne. We're going to try to dive into Louder Than Life Festival in Louisville, so I'm excited about that. So a few things coming with that. So my special guest is somebody that has already been on the show and is one of my best friends and somebody very close to me. Lives in Hendersonville, Tennessee, so we're coming live from Hendersonville. And my special guest is Jim, aka James Dalton. So what's up, brother? How are you doing?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me, man.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you again for coming on. You're always fun. Me and you have probably done 100 podcasts, even though we've only now recorded two, because every time we're together, it's like we're podcasting because we're talking about tons of stuff. You and I have dove into a lot of things, and it's always just like we have the best combos. Like, man, it's like Christine will hit the hay, and then we're like, all right, let's dive deep into fucking Lincoln and the Beatles. Like, we get into all kinds of shit. So it's really cool and it's a lot of fun. So I always look forward to having you on.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like only if a fly were on the wall whenever we talk about that type of thing. But then again, it's like it goes down a rabbit hole to where it's like I don't know if anybody other than the two of us would find it entertaining. So it's probably best that we don't record those.
Exactly, because there's some things that are said that I'm like, yeah, I don't need that recorded. Do not need that recorded. So before we dive in, I gotta tell a story to you and the listeners in general. Very, very interesting day yesterday. So I went to Cincinnati with my friend yesterday, and she had never been to the Cincinnati Zoo. She had never been to the Omnimax, never really experienced the city. And for the listeners and for anybody that doesn't know, Cincinnati is just like basically Louisville's my hometown, but Nashville and Cincinnati are like the two towns I know like the back of my hand. And I always love going, been a billion times. And in Cincinnati, even though it gets a bad rap in some parts, and my company owns some places in some parts, I always feel safe. I've never felt in danger. I've never felt any sketchiness at all or anything. So we go up there yesterday, and I'm a pothead for the listeners, and we go to a smoke spot, one of my favorite spots, which is on top of Mount Adams on the top of Cincinnati, and it's got a great lookout and everything. So her and I go up there, smoke, go to the zoo. Zoo is incredible. Actually, I made a Facebook status about it. A grandpa ended up taking me in. I was sitting there eating my chicken and waffles by myself as I'm just sitting there enjoying it. And she Danielle's in line for her food. And as I'm eating my chicken and waffles, this woman and a baby comes up, and an old woman and a baby comes up and goes, "Can we sit with you?" And I was like, "Sure, but where's your food?" And they were like, "This man's getting it, our dad." And I said, Cool. Yeah, come sit with me. I don't care." I said, "I just have one other person in my party." So they come and sit down. And this is not the sketchy part. The sketchy part's the end of the story, but this was the fun part. I had to share this too. So as they come to the table and sit down, I'm playing with the baby. I'm eating my chicken and waffles. I'm vibing. I'm drinking beer. Zoo had great beers. And next thing you know, Danielle sits down and she's like, "Who are these people?" I said, "They needed a seat. They're joining us. They're our new family." So the lady, I've already introduced my name to her, the old woman. This old man, he's probably close to 80, walks up with this big tray of food. And he literally just bluntly looks at me and goes, "Who the hell are you?" And his wife goes, "That's our new grandson." And she goes, "His name's Eric." And I said, "Hi, Grandpa." just like that. Now, when I said hi, Grandpa, a couple things came to mind. I didn't know if he was going to punch me in the mouth. I didn't know, like, I was going to get that old story of just he's going to give me one of the chin, or he was going to lie. So he looks me dead in the eyes, and he takes his sunglasses off, and he says, "Fine, but I refuse to put you in the will." And I lose it. And then he just goes, "I'm gonna go get ketchup for the table," and just walks off. It was pretty iconic. So we leave there, we go to a few more smoke spots, we go to the Omni Max, we're having a good time, we're having a blast. So I told her, I said, up by the art museum in Cincinnati, there's this crazy lookout, and it's very low key and chill. And not a lot of people know about it. And it actually looks over Mirror Lake, which is haunted. Mirror Lake is this haunted lake in Cincinnati. It's like a little pond park. And they have like a gazebo that's haunted where this dude shot his wife in the stomach who was cheating on him. So people say she haunts a gazebo. So we're looking out over that park at this lookout. And I told Danielle, I said, no one's going to bother us up here. This is super chill. So we're relaxing, looking over the Ohio. Helicopter, 7 p.m. So my Hyundai, I keep a steering wheel lock on it because it's been fucked with. And Jim knows the story. I dealt with the Kia boys of Louisville, and the Kia boys are in all the states now. I actually just saw they're in Connecticut. They're all over this big gang just stealing Kias and Hyundais. And a lot of times they just do it for clout and fun. Sometimes they do it for profit. Louisville's been getting a lot of these chop shops broken down, so you never know. So we're up there on top of this mountain for about 25 minutes, and I hear a beep, and we're up there smoking, chilling, but where I'm at, there should be nobody, like especially where we're at. Like it's a very low key spot. It took me years to find it, and I just hear. Bum 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 jam bum 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 jam bum bum bum. And I'm like, okay. So I look at Danielle, and no offense to the ladies out there, but sometimes you ladies can be a little hard-headed. And when I'm like, hey, we need to go. This is dangerous. This is not good. Sometimes you're combative, like, oh, what's going on? Or you play dumb, like, where are we at? I don't know what to do. Again, I'm not saying all the ladies. I'm just saying sometimes I've experienced that where it's like, what's going on? So I look at Danielle. Thank God she was smart. And I said, hey, if I say get to the car, we get to the fucking car. And she's like, okay. And I said, but I don't live in fear. I don't care. I said, it's a park. Who gives a shit? Somebody might just come up here to chill. So we're smoking, we're hanging out, looking over to Ohio. I'm talking to her. And I turn around and it's a Kia. But it has all tinted windows. But here's the deal. It goes past my Hyundai with no license plate, number one. And number two, it stops and starts backing up. And I looked at Danielle and I said, hey, get to the fucking car. And she's like, what? I said, get to the fucking car. And she's like, okay. So she starts beelining. I start going, and next thing you know, the window, the like side start rolling down, and the dude in the back's like, hey, hey. And I take off running, and I get to a sprint, and I unlock my door. And thank God that where we were at, I knew we were right by my car, so I didn't put that like steering wheel lock thing on. So
Right.
I just get in, and dude, I look in my rear view, and there's four guys rushing my car. And I peel off 65 down this fucking mountain, flick them the fuck off, and I fucking fly down to fucking Mirror Lake. And Danielle's like, she's freaking out. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Holy shit, we almost got robbed. And so I'm like, the fucking Kia boys, these motherfuckers are after me again. So next thing you know, I fuck the Kia boys, by the way. On Vibin' with Sleazy says fuck the Kia boys. Sleazy stands for that. I'm not saying speaking for Jim, but Eric Clark says fuck the Kia boys. But anyway, so at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck what state you're at either. Fuck you. So next thing you know, I get fucking, we go down the mountain and they fucking like U-turn out. And, but they're like still up on the mountain part. So I know this park. It's like Mount Eden. And there's like a lookout point that looks over the river. And I get out there towards the front and I look up to the right and I'm just looking and I'm like staring right at the place that we were at. And that car is sitting right there. I can see it. And Danielle goes, "Oh my gosh, I can see the car." And I said, "Yep, I can too." So she goes, "What do we do?" I said, "Danielle, we're in a 100-person area right now. There's people everywhere. I'm not worried." And I said, "You know what else? We're going back." She said, "We're going back." I said, "We're going back to see what the fuck's going on." I said, "We're going to go the right way, take a right, and just see." So we go up the hill, and she's like, "Eric, I don't know about this." I said, just let me drive." We go up the hill, and dude, I look real quick, like a glimpse, and it's just this big ass group of people now by that car. And I look at her and I said, "We're getting the fuck out of Cincinnati tonight." So we fly out, we go to the Tickle Pickle over in Kentucky, eat some food, and roll back home. Perfect day, great trip. I'm gonna go back again probably next month. But at the end of the day, holy shit, what an adrenaline rush. I know Jim's my guest. I just had to get that story out, but what a crazy experience in Cincinnati. I couldn't believe that happened. The four guys just started rushing after my car. I was like, "This is bad news. They're trying to steal my car."
You have the wildest stories, and I already heard the first one because I read it on Facebook on the random event that I actually like opened it because I got an alert, and I'm like, oh yeah, and for it's just like all intents and purposes. I have a Facebook account, but I don't do anything with it, and so whenever I just like, oh, I got an alert, let me see what it is, and then that was the first thing that I saw where like some old man was like, he's not getting put in the will. I just lost my mind.
Dude, I lost it at the zoo. I was cracking up so hard, and the old man was hilarious when he said that. And then, dude, he was that old dude that just cracked jokes non-fucking stop. It was comedy. Like he'd randomly just go, like his daughter was holding the baby, and the baby, of course, was like flipping and moving around, and he goes, "Look at a little acrobat." And like he just that's the funny comments. And so then me and him start talking. He's like, "You ever been to Detroit?" I said, "Have I ever been to Detroit? By the way, I'm like weird to get into this deep talk about Detroit with this old man." And I'm like,
Was gonna say, did you tell him the story about how you went up there and had a whole
"Yes."
shit show of an experience?
Yes, dude. I told him the good times and the bad. I said, "There's been some good in Detroit and there's been some bad in Detroit for me." And he was rolling. And I randomly named a neighborhood. I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "What you know about Bloomfield Hills?" I said, "My buddy lived there." He was like, "I was born and raised in Bloomfield Hills." And I was cracking up. So it was a good vibe. This dude, they like became family. And then at the end of the lunch, what was really crazy, the daughter looks at me and she's like, "Hey, I'm pregnant." And I was like, "Congratulate." I wasn't like, "It's
I
mine.
was
It's
about to say,
not
not mine.
mine. I've only been here 45 minutes." So next thing you know, hey, I can deliver quick, but 45 minutes, like pregnancy, that's quick turnaround. So I said, "You're married with two kids and you got a third one?" I said, That's awesome. She's like, "Yeah, my husband's at work. We're doing a zoo day with the grandparents." I said, "This is beautiful. I'm glad I'm part of this." They're like, "We love you, Eric." So I'm feeling like a vibe. I feel like I've now gained this second family. It feels special. So out of nowhere, as I'm eating my waffle, by the way, I'm like lit and I'm being so polite and I'm in my mode. I'm playing with the baby. I'm eating the waffle. Danielle's like, "Are you gonna finish your waffle?" I'm like, "Yes." I'm eating the waffle. And I look up, and the girl, the pregnant lady across the table goes, "I know I just met you." And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "What should I name my third child?" And I was like, "What?"
Nope.
I was
Hard
like,
pass.
I said, "Am I really in the family?" And she was like, "I feel like I was meant to meet you and ask you for names for my daughter. And I said, this is deep. And I'm holding a waffle, syrup's all over my hand. So I look at the grandma and I said, can I get a baby wipe? She's like, yep, get the baby wipe, clean the syrup. And I just go, what about Lucinda? She said, I knew I needed to talk to you. She goes, Lucinda's one of my cousins. I said, I knew I was supposed to be in this family. I said, next one. This one, Rebecca. She's like, I love Rebecca, but she's like, I don't know about that Becky nickname. I said, oh yeah, that Becky nickname. We just start diving deep. I think I ended up rolling out with like Scarlet or Margaret, so something I just threw off the tongue. And she was like, ooh. And then I go, what about getting space with it? She's like, what are you talking about? I said, I'm about to go to the Omnimax today and see some space shit. I said, what about Venus? She's like, ooh, Venus. I said, yeah. So I go, we gotta go. But I love you. We're out. Peace. So that baby, if it pops out and it's a little Venus, that's my godchild. I'm
You're gonna
calling
have to
my
put some
mom.
sort of like alert out on the internet to just see, unless you took away like their phone numbers and everything and you got them online and you're just like, yeah, I'm keeping up with these people. I'm seeing what they do. Like, you don't have to go and look at the like registry of the names that are registered on birth certificates and stuff like that to the point where you're like, oh, yeah,
You're like,
they picked that one.
I look it up, and then out of nowhere, it's like I hear a lawyer and I get a cease and desist letter at my door or something. And it's serving me, and it's like, you have now custody of Venus. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck? I just named it the zoo. How many beers did I have? But I was thinking about that. I was like, wow, what a wild day. But that was my fun, crazy adventure in Cincinnati. So, I want to dive into with you, Jim, because the last time I had you on, we talked about who you were. We did it down there from Tennessee. We talked about your chemistry background. We talked about you and I meeting at the trails and AI and all that, and Christine. But at the end of the day, I want to break down talking to cycling. So you're really big into cycling. You have been, and so. I want to ask you first off a few questions just about your passion for it, and then I want to kind of break down some of the races and the stuff that you know.
Yeah.
So my first question is with the cycling deal. When did you know that like cycling was for you, that you fell in love with it, or that you just got enjoyment out of it?
Yeah, so that's a loaded question. But you know, it's
What age do you, well, just start off with this. What age do you think?
it would have been grade school, middle school territory. But you know, it's a very cost, and this is just complete transparency. It's very cost prohibitive because it's, you know, it takes a lot of money to actually do the thing, as well as it requires space. And whenever you're at that age, you can't necessarily rely upon, unless you are very capable and athletic and all this other stuff. Like, if you don't show a talent for it, you're not going to get a ton of investment in it. So it's not like going to play little league ball and stuff like that, where it's very, you know, here in the States, it's very communalized, where you can go and like say, oh, we're going to go play basketball, we're going to go play football, baseball, whatever, and it's very socialized. We don't have a lot of cycling community here in the younger years, so it was very much a spectator sport at that, and it was right around the time of seeing a lot of the, you know, US Postal Service and stuff like that, kind of come to prominence with, you know, Lance Armstrong and stuff like that. But it wasn't until probably about 10 years ago, whenever I was financially capable of being able to, you know, go out and buy a bike and actually do all of that. And from there, it was very much a incrementalized, you know, kind of just escalation of like, oh, this is great. This is something that I really enjoy. And then it was, you know, just kind of stair-stepped up from there. Granted, you know, no, I'm not going to turn pro. I'm not going to be able to make a living off of this. I don't have any delusions like that. But it's also the same thing of like, you can, you know, take care of yourself. You can go and explore the world around you. You don't necessarily have to think about it through the context of performance. You're just like out having a good time type of thing. But you can also get very, very detail oriented and obsessive about it and think like, oh, this has a technical aspect of it, where like you can think about like the different components and stuff like that. So that's a little bit of the, kind of background with it. And thankfully, and I will put a little caveat on this as far as the financial capability, is that companies that actually offer their employees a stipend for healthcare on top of actual health insurance, like you can say, oh, I can spend X amount of dollars through, it's a portal or it's something deposited on their bank account or whatever, to spend on qualified purchases. That was also extremely helpful because that helped me get the first bike that's over my left shoulder here, that's on a trainer now, which is an alloy bike and heavy as shit by all intents and
I've
purposes
seen that
when
thing. I've
compared
seen
to this, the bike that's behind me that I just moved. It's this one to the left is like 6 pounds heavier, which makes a world difference. But that type of, compensation helps to go like, oh, I can actually envision myself doing this. You can use it on a YMCA membership. You can use it on any type of other membership for that type of thing. But at the end of the day, that was also very, very much a part of that whole experience of going, oh, I can see myself doing this now, rather than just going, oh, that's something that's, beyond my grasp, financially.
So I picked up two things that you said that I wanted to kind of piggyback off of. So getting into a beginner, especially financially, kids don't have tons of money a lot of times, parents, and the kid might already be involved with multiple sports, and so cycling might be put at the back burner for the kid, until he gets to the time and get the money. So would you say this, just out of your opinion, that a lot of kids or adults that cycle now or have made this a hobby or a practice now, going back when they were kids, were more of like BMXers and people like kind of just riding basic bikes just with their friends, and that's who fell in love with it?
It's tough to say where it comes from, because it could potentially come from a variety of different sources. Because yeah, I have a BMX bike. It's a Mongoose. It was oh hey sorry I forgot to turn off all the
It
gestures
did
on the
put his
like
thumbs up. A
next side of the
bubble
house.
thumbs up popped up. That's cool. That's really cool.
But turning off reactions. But like it's tough to say, because you get a lot of different people from different walks of life that are about it. And it may not come from like, oh, it was cost prohibitive, or I was doing X, Y, and Z, or you have the other folks that are like, I can't run anymore. That's the other thing of like, you get the runners that, may have done cross country track and everything through high school, college, and they blew out their knees. And they get into their, late 30s, and everything is just kind of like, nope, not doing that anymore. And they may not have like a pool accessible to do swimming. They're looking for something that's a little bit easier on the legs to be able to, keep their, physiological like aerobic, fitness up. And they're just kind of like, well, this makes the most sense. But usually that's a little bit later in life when you have a lot more money to kind of spend on stuff. But it just really depends. I haven't seen like a common thread.
And my dad actually, when I was a kid, I always remembered him having bikes hanging from the ceiling in the garage, and like he was not no big cyclist, but he go cycle with friends. I think when he in the younger days, him and my mom would do it, and then he got me a bike, and then of course I bike, but I played sports, but he was always the one thing at our house, he always had an exercise bike. I mean, my dad was always about cycling and pumping and doing those kind of things. But what's interesting is he got away from it for a number of years, the older he's gotten. And he just got double knee replacement actually 3 days ago. So he is actually happier than a clam. He's completely improved. He when they did his one knee, his knee had no cartilage and it was completely bone on bone, and he was in so much pain. And it's freaky that they put on your two brand new knees and you can just walk out of the place. And now what's interesting, a lot of these doctors and surgeons, they FedExed a bike to my parents' house, and now it sits in their dining room, and he pumps and there's a screen, and the doctor can track stuff, and he can get like help from
Yep.
like area. And so it's just cool with, surgery and technology in the future, but it's always interesting how cycling gets back involved even in the rehab program.
Well, and you bring up a good point about like the technology expansion into not just rehab, but a lot of the other, components of what that whole experience would look like. Because you have heart rate monitors, you have, just power monitors if you want to see how hard somebody is doing it. Because yeah, you know how old somebody is, but you don't know how hard they're actually working outside of like their cardiac input. And if you see like, oh, well, this person is like pushing super hard, like they're going heavy in the paint, it's like, yeah, you need to ease up, like take it easy, like don't w try and work so hard.
Yeah.
And it's really just interesting to see how that whole thing operates, in the context of like does your dad have a monitor or anything that he wears on his wrist or anything that he
I
wears like
believe
whenever
there's
he's doing that or?
I believe there's like a monitor, and then also the machine will track so much of the data, and the doctor can actually log into the machine and see what he submitted and stuff like that. I went and mowed my parents' grass today due to them. Just they're 70 years old, and my grandma's 94. My grandma just got basically leg surgery 2 weeks ago. So my mom's running around like chicken with her head cut off. I'm running around like crazy. And so mowing their grass is not a big deal. They don't have a huge yard, but I stopped by and I talked to him before I left, and he told me he's got the bike. He's already feeling better. He's working through it. He feels that he can get around, but he said it was already, he felt like he pushed it too hard for a bit that first day. And I told him, you can tend to do that. And the doctor said that as well. I read about that. So he's easing off that, but he's getting comfortable with it. And so he told me he's just gonna, it's a day by day deal. But it was just really interesting that that was part of the rehab. And you just wouldn't think about that, but it's so important when you get those replacements to have that extension and that flow and that stretch, you know.
Well,
So
in that moment.
oh yeah.
Oh,
So
go ahead.
I was gonna ask you real quick question that was a part that I picked up from what you said earlier. So why do you think it's just a little sad question about cycling. So why do you think, because I remember this, especially with stamps and sponsorship and like uniforms, why do you think the U.S. Postal Service got involved with cycling? You don't see them in a lot
That
of sports, to be real.
That's something that I have no line of sight to, and I have not looked into it as
Just
far as
curious,
like
yeah.
why they got into like sponsoring a cycling team. I mean, at face value, whenever I look at it, it's like, well, you have somebody who was doing relatively well, all things considered, from the US. I don't know who was having conversations on the back end to actually facilitate that. For all intents and purposes, there was no real like investment after that from, a US based company, from my knowledge, that would like be at the same level of a government organization, and that's the weird part about it, is that it's like, why would a government organization start to do that? I have no idea.
Exactly. That was so mind-blowing when you mentioned it, but I remember that. And what's crazy about a government bringing up the Postal Service, it's like they were involved back in the day in puzzles too. They used to have puzzles that they would sell part of their, I guess, propaganda or memorabilia they put out. It just interesting the stuff that a government entity was getting behind. It's just wild to think about that. So when it comes to cycling, what are the different types of cycling? Would you say?
So yeah, it's relatively, you have quite a bit whenever it comes to like breadth and depth, just like you have with any kind of sport, there, especially those like, running or swimming or anything that's not necessarily related to a fixed time frame. So it really does vary. Whenever it comes to the things like cycling, yeah, you have things like road, you have time trials, you have anything like gravel, cyclocross, ultras, things like that. You do have a lot of different variability with it. And then you can really go a little further and say, like, well, then we have, okay, cool, stage races like the Tour de France, where it's like, oh, there's different stages for a set amount of time, and whoever, gets across the finish line in the shortest amount of time is the winner. But then you have also those that are like non-stage races, where you don't necessarily have a clock that stops. It's always running. One of the biggest examples of that is the Race Across America. And that's whenever that starts in California and ends in Virginia now. It's moved, but it's basically a time that doesn't stop. You start in California, it's supported, which is, you are allowed like a team to actually help you, but you have to make it yourself. Like that is the whole thing. There's nobody like tagging you out and then they take over for you or anything like that. So there's that, but there's also a very US, and this is the US centric one, even though it does exist in Europe, and it's a little bit different in Europe, and that's where the delineation kind of happens, because cycling is very much a European centric sport. And so in US it's a lot different. I'm not say a lot different in quotations, but you have like criteriums here in the States, which are single day events that are, dependent, they're time dependent, 30 minutes to an hour, but they're not necessarily like very, very long distance related events. And so they're more of considered like shorter events, obviously, for that time frame. But and those happen more frequently, along with gravel, and then you have like ultra related stuff, like the RAM that I mentioned earlier, as well as the what is it? It starts in Canada, ends at the Mexican border. Good grief. Tour Divide. And it's basically like the longest mountain bike race. It's like 2,700 miles or something bonkers like that, and it's self-supported, and it is a real test as to what you're capable of doing, not just from like you as a cyclist, but being your own mechanic and taking care of your own food and all that other kind of good stuff. So there's that. And so it really spans the capabilities of like, do you consider yourself somebody who's more of somebody who climbs Mount Everest, who is by by yourself if you don't have a Sherpa, or do you consider yourself somebody who is going to climb a different mountain with the unnamed support? You're a millionaire and you can, afford whatever. So there's like a juxtaposition there, and it's all in the same type of like, how much of a glutton for punishment are you?
And cycling just seems like it promotes so much independence too, and it seems like it is a sport that, it's mind, body, and soul kind of deal. I mean, you really got to push your spirit with it and got to have that tough grit, it seems like, to really get through a lot of races. And I see it just seeing people on TV, it's like, man, they go the distance, and then even like being around you, when I've come down to visit, you'll go out for a ride and I'm like, how long did you go? And you're like, oh, you'll tell me this distance. And I'm just like, holy shit. But it's just really fascinating how far people can go. So would you say that there's any cyclists that growing up, or even when you really got really into it, that motivated you, or you were followed, or some of your favorites?
Not necessarily. That's the thing about it, is that I can respect like individuals that actually do the craft as a professional, especially whenever you look at folks in like the large scale tours. It's not necessarily those that win races. It's those that are, there's a specific subset of those that are in those types of tours called domestiques, and they're the ones that do the work. And they are the ones that are just out there suffering. They don't ever win, or well, they very rarely win. I'll say that. They very rarely win. And they don't get a lot of accolades. At the end of their career, they typically go to be, trainers, and they don't see a lot of the same things that, like, your Tour de France winners typically, see, just from a name basis outside of the industry. Those in the industry see them and they're just like, oh, you are a strong person. You hustled and you are a monster. And those types of people, they get it, and but they don't see a lot of that. So I always look to those types of people to see what that looks like. And it's not just with like current generations, but it's, previous generations, and those names are none that anybody would recognize. That's the thing that kind of sucks for those folks. But at the end of the day, I look to see what those types of people do from a training capacity, as well as what they throughput whenever they do the work, and see like, okay, cool, that's the top end. Because there's no way that, like a Lance Armstrong did what he did without a lot of support. That's the thing that people don't talk about, is that these types of big cycling races are team sports. They just don't talk about it in that context here in the US. But, you have a lot of people crowding around one person that is designed to get to the finish line. And they are to be the, crowned winner, and everybody else is just a match. You're just burning those matches.
And that's what I
So
was curious about. Like, I was going to ask you though, do those people get do people on the team get mad at that one guy who gets all the accolades and the stardom?
no, that's what they're there for. Like, you're typically signed up to be a domestique or a super domestique, which you are designed to be that person. Like, say for example, y'all's radio goes out and you're out there. You are the de facto team, like, captain at that point. And you
Wow.
say, cool, go crowd around our race leader, go get up on him, give him the slipstream, which means get in front of him, let him draft behind you or her, depending upon, who, gender or whatever. But, you get out there and make sure they're taken care of, so that way they can actually bring home the win. Because at the end of the day, these teams are all like vying for not only just the sponsorship money, but the race win money, so that way they can actually keep themselves in that whole business of having a race team. They can show results. They can say, hey, look, we are validated by this recent win. We got, X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 and keep giving us money.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing around it.
Now, these people that are getting paying the money to these teams, besides like sponsorship and winning at the races, do you feel like is there like an association that backs it up at all, or financially, or is there donors? I mean, is there like how's that kind of work financially backing with these teams? Like, is it just sponsorships? Pretty much paying these and the race wins, is that pretty much the only income?
I mean, I can't speak to the back end business side of it because I've never seen it myself.
Yeah.
But you can really listen to what a lot of, former racers say of like watching teams just blow up and disappear,
Yeah.
of like, well, at the end of, this whole sponsorship, all we had was a bunch of bikes and this all, trailer, and then a van, or not a van, but a tour bus that got sold off. And they really have a limited amount of investment in it. And I say limited amount of investment because, do the math, the bikes themselves are like, $12,000 a piece.
Woo.
That's being a little bit on the potentially low side, because you're not counting for mechanics and all the other folks inside of that whole work stream, where they don't necessarily have a lot of, financial benefit to it. That's the whole thing of like, you can't, like, you're not making money off of those people that are supporting those athletes. So whenever those teams, kind of fall apart, that's all you have left. As to what their financial benefit is, it's not something that we see here stateside. And you don't necessarily know, like, oh, does any type of team that's like Jumbo-Visma or Sky or anybody like that, are they getting any kind of brand bump? Because that's it. That's the same thing. Like, how much of a bump does here in the United States does a NASCAR company get? Well, yeah, they're owned by separate companies, but they're sponsored by Tide or you name it, and you're just like, well, does Tide really get a brand bump from going around a track 500 times? So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if these companies really get much of a back end bump, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, and you think about all the sponsorships involved and just sponsorships in general. I remember working at the paper and just doing small sponsorships, and it's always so fascinating the give and take with it and how all the packages are come up with sponsorships. So you when you talk about sports teams and cycling and race teams, you're like, there's a lot of money involved, a lot of back and forth. So and then bike prices, that just blows my mind what you just named. What would you say, just theory wise, just a prediction, what would you say maybe in a range is the most expensive bike out there, price wise?
Oh, dude, the sky's the limit. It's just like anything. You can, you can spend any kind of money on a bike that you want. But like, if you were going to say, let's do this as an exercise. So if you were to say the best pro tour frame, and I use that in quotes, is because it's not accessible to the actual, marketplace. It's not something that you or I could go and buy. Like the ones that you and I could go and buy, the frame in and of itself, which is just the part that I'm in, and granted, it's that you ride on, and it's not, no wheels, no nothing else, just the frame, that would be about $5,000.
Oh my gosh.
That's just for the frame that's been carved out so much to the point where it's like so light, but yet so strong that it can act so strong. And I use strong in replacement of stiff as a cyclist kind of equivalent to say, like, oh, a bike is stiff. And that's not something that the average person who doesn't know like how a bike feels would understand. So it's like a strong bike, but you tack on $5,000, and then you say, okay, cool, $2,000 for just the wheels. And so that's just this component, just this thing. So that's another $2,000. And then you tack on all the other components, and you're very r easily into the $12,000 to $15,000 range for those types of bikes. But for all intents and purposes, if you were to say, oh, I am somebody who is very much into this, I really enjoy it, it's something that I love to do, you can say, okay, well, here's the pro level. I'll take a step down below, and you can usually get like a lot of those types. And for your listeners, I'll step it down to where it's like, hey, if you're bike curious, you can get into this and give them kind of an idea of the best practices, where to go and what to do for that as well. But like, for those folks, you can really range it if you really want to spend the money. That's the whole thing. You gotta want to do it.
Money
But it's
talks,
like, yeah, it's like you can get, secondhand, you can get bike, and this is pour one out for any bike shop that's closing down. You can get those, you can get, folks that are, closing down from a warehousing standpoint. You can really game the system to get things that are much, much cheaper and just poke around. But the thing about it is you need experience to do that. So, those types of things can range between like, oh, I can get out the door with a bike that is up near the step below for $5,000, which is still pretty expensive, like that's not something to trifle with. But like, if you go to like, I just want to get into this, I just want to have fun, I just want to see what it's like, I just want to understand what this is all about without doing a lot of, financial investment, one, you can go to your local bike shop. That's the first thing that you need to do. And you need to go there and say, hey, I am just looking for a bike to ride. And it doesn't matter if it's, road bike, gravel bike, mountain bike. You just really need to understand, like, hey, I want to have this ceiling as far as how much I'm going to pay. And just know that as I go down, I'm going to be sacrificing stuff. But if you want a standard way to kind of get into this without spending a lot of money, the core word is fitness bike, because then that'll keep you under about $1,000. You can get a bike that actually is made from a solid manufacturer, and you can actually get it out the door and start riding.
What are a few of
The
your favorite
only
brands that you would say?
I would just say stick with a reputable brand. We here in town have a specialized shop. So there's some, any of your listeners that are into bikes may, crap on them, as well as Trek and any of the other, manufacturers here stateside. But there's also Pinarello. I have a Ridley here. I rode a Ridley for years. They're from Belgium.
Ooh.
But I also like my road bike here is a Specialized Tarmac SL7. My gravel bike is a Specialized Crux. And then I have the Mongoose. But also at the end of the day, Christine has a Trek, just like exercise bike that she's had for years. But it's not anything that like we upgrade or anything like that. It works for what she's doing. But it's just one of those things where get it from a bike shop. They know what they're doing. Don't I don't say don't go to Walmart, especially for kids' bikes and stuff like that, because kids are gonna outgrow them. They're not gonna use them for years. But you don't need to spend a ton of money. Just get on a bike and have fun with it. Don't worry about it. If you find yourself like leaning into that, yeah, then go down that rabbit hole. But don't do it at the front end. Just like be bike curious and then go down that rabbit hole later on.
What would you say your favorite experience has been with biking? Or maybe your favorite, what's your favorite ride you've ever done? You got a memorable ride?
It's interesting to say that, because there are several. And I think that it's anytime you hit a threshold, anytime you hit, like the first time I hit 100 kilometers or 62 miles, it was like, oh, I actually did that. Anytime I hit 100 miles, 120 miles, 150 miles, like you get to those types of lines in the sand, and you unpack what it's like to actually understand your capability.
Okay.
You realize that, oh, I can go farther. Oh, I can figure this out. Because a lot of the things that you get to a certain point of like understanding what you are doing, and then you go, oh, but I have to plan for water. I have to plan for food. I have to plan for any insert any type of being out here in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee, you kind of have the opportunity to encounter some interesting characters. So you kind of want to plan around that. But like you reach those milestones, and it unlocks a, oh, I know I'm capable of doing more. And I think that that's kind of the superpower of that whole experience, is that you understand that, oh, you actually can do more than what your limits that you previously thought that were there, they just don't exist. And you have to just build yourself up to that point, and then once you break past it, it's you're in a whole nother realm of understanding about yourself. And I think that that's the big part about it, is every time you get there, you understand something a little bit more. So it's not necessarily rides that are specific to a region, specific to a route, specific to anything like that. You just remember those types of things. And I could sit here and say, oh, it was the first time that, I went from Navarre to Pensacola and back, and or, just that was a pretty ride and it was very, very, entertaining and stuff like that. But it's like, that was a, a drop in the bucket, all things considered, because that's only 34 miles. So, it is what it is.
Yeah, and you blow my mind with the mileage, man. It's just that's incredible. But it's also too, I think it's incredible that cycling, not only can, test your body and, put you to the test, but also you can see the world with it. You really can. You can see so many things with it. I wanted to ask you another question. What would you say some bucket list places you would want to cycle? Where would Jim would want to cycle? Maybe like top three, maybe not even like a course or anything, but just like a location. Is there anywhere that you, if you could just tomorrow, just swipe the card and go, where would you go?
So if I could swipe the card and not have a job, that's thing number one. That's thing number one, and then two, train for a year, and then three, do the needful with regards to all the preparation associated with it. I would do RAM, Race Across America, which that's being a glutton for punishment. That's 3,300 miles. That's from California to Virginia. And the if you do it in sub 10 days, you're a monster. And that's a supported ride. That's where you can pay people to actually do it. And the average cost to do it is about, well, granted, this is, I looked up these numbers a number of years ago, so I'm sure it's inflated a bit, but back then it was $30,000. And so most of the folks that do this type of thing would say, like, hey, I'm doing it for this cause or whatever, blah, 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 blah. And they typically just eat their costs for supporting themselves, which I would do the same. But the other one would be the other one that I mentioned, which was the Tour Divide, which is going the entire length of the Rocky Mountains, and that's about 2,700 miles. That goes from just up above the Canadian border all the way to the Mexican border. And it's quote unquote considered the longest mountain bike ride, but most folks that do it have a modified gravel bike, or kind of the mullet build that I kind of flashed up on the screen earlier, which is just having a road bike with a big cassette like this on the back end. That's more aerodynamic. But I would do that, but that's a lot of time and a lot of risk. But yeah, those two would be on it. The third one that I could potentially do, which is very much in within access because it's here in the area, it's the Natchez Trace 444. And that's 444 miles. It starts out at the Loveless Cafe and then goes the whole Natchez Trace. That's another supported one, but that's again, like, you don't get to dictate when you start that one, which is the downside to it. You just basically, you enter a raffle. They say, okay, cool, here's your start time, and you could start at 10 p.m. And it's a non-staged race, so you're just constantly going, and you're just like, okay, so if I start at 10 p.m. that means I'm going from 10 p.m. just onwards. Dude, that's rough. That's one of those things where you have to sign up for the sleep deprivation and everything, even though you're signing up for it anyway. Like, even if you started at 6 a.m. you're signing up for that anyway. But like, if you don't know that, like, I'm starting at 10 p.m. what the hell, man? Like, I don't know how I'm gonna actually handle this. But also there's like some other stuff that I've toyed around with, from doing like creating a charity ride, which would not necessarily be tied to any geographical location, but just more or less saying, hey, if you do this, this is the amount of kilometers or mileage that would be like associated with, go out and do your fundraising and stuff like that. But that's just more or less one of those things where I would say, like, I would do, like, for example, where I live currently. You know where I've grown up. You've driven through there.
Yeah.
What you probably haven't seen is the time it takes to drive from here to Centralia, Illinois. And
Ooh.
it's not long. It's not long by car. It's 4
Yeah.
hours. And, like, back of my mind was like, well, if I could, and this would be fun to do just from, like, I would be able to get this type of ultra type of approach with it if I could say, hey, I'm raising money for insert organization here. I haven't identified that, haven't figured that out. Don't know the route yet, but it's one of those things where I'm like, if I could figure out a route from Hendersonville, Tennessee to Centralia, Illinois, and then do that and then say, okay, cool, here you go. And I think it was last I spec'd this out was like 270 something miles. It's like leave here at 5 in the morning and get there by at least 8 at night. That might be a feasible thing.
Yeah,
So,
that'd be fun.
yeah.
And even
Well,
I thought
fun
of
is a
sponsor.
different word for it.
Well, we could sponsor Stevie. Stevie could be
Oh, good grief.
the
For
charity.
your listeners listening at home, if you want to see a very, very, very punch to the gut documentary, y'all need to look up Stevie. It's
Oh
the
my gosh.
same director that what like that done Hoop Dreams and oof. That's all I'm gonna say about
I just had to
that.
drop that. I knew that'd make you laugh. But no, I really appreciate you answering the questions and diving into. I know we could go for hours on. I just really wanted to just get some basic knowledge of people. I feel like what you said was good for listeners that want to start with it. Also, you gave, I feel like a little confidence boost to people on what, they can be pushed with. And then two, it's just cycling is such a complex, beautiful thing. I mean, I've gained so much respect from it just from learning from you about it and then just the research I've done on it. So, overall, I think it's going to keep evolving too.
Oh, it always is. And it's one of those things that's just like any other, not just sport, but industry and you name any type of music. It always is evolving and growing and changing just based on the things that are happening with the, market and athletics and you name it. And it will continue to do that. But at the same time, there are those that will continue to kind of stay the same-ish.
And that's what's really cool. And I'm excited to learn more about it. And I'm excited to have you on again. I know that you'll be a future guest. We always have good shows, and I know the next episode we can dive into a random topic, and it'll probably go into 10 different directions. But before we sign off, and I do my sign off, is there any recommendations that you have for people like to be able to research anything to read or magazines or even if they want to contact you, I'll let you send some things.
Yeah, I'll have to figure out some way for folks to reach out to me independently, but I'm always happy to help with any kind of, cycling stuff related to this. It's not something I shy away from. I'm not on social media a whole ton, so that's why I'd have to kind of figure that out. So I'll have to relay that to you so that
Reach
way you
out to
can just
me.
like
If anybody wants to reach out to Jim, reach out to Eric Clark, the host, the Bible Sleazy here, and I will get you in contact somehow. I will call Jim and we'll figure it out.
There it is. I have email.
Yeah,
It's like there
true.
it is.
Yeah.
And this is also a good motivator for me to be like, oh, maybe I should just like get back up on Instagram and do that whole thing again. And I haven't touched like this stuff in years, so it'd be good for me to just put that out there and be like,
Yeah,
hey, here
dude.
you go.
Yeah, that'd be like get the cycling going on the Instagram and get it promoted. I know people be into it. And again, man, I always appreciate what I've learned from you and thank you. So I want to thank everybody for listening, tuning in, downloading this is another great episode with an awesome guest. I look forward to having Jim on again in the future. If you haven't heard me and Jim's first episode, go back. All the old episodes are on BibleWithSleazy.com. On all the platforms, you can just look up Bible with Sleazy the podcast. Facebook, Instagram, Bible with Sleazy the podcast. Reach out, show love, leave 5 stars. And again, I appreciate all of you all. You all have been amazing. The season will continue, so there will actually be 8 more episodes. So I'm going to probably wrap up around May, so maybe before or after Derby. But overall, I can't thank you all enough. Season 5 has been awesome. But Jim, thank you, and we are out. Hendersonville, Tennessee. Peace.
Woo woo. Thank you.